Thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos with the Mile High Show. I'm packing up my gear right now, heading out to do our recording. We were scheduled to be back at the Point Bar and Lounge in Prescott, Arizona on Montezuma Street. Last week, we recorded there with Kevin Skevel, a local musician and business advocate for the Prescott area. And we recorded with Kevin there because he is a regular participant, sit-in musician with the Ping Brothers open mic that they host. The Ping Brothers host every Sunday at the Point. And just when we finished up recording, I got a chance to meet Doug Ping and set up a time to sit down with him and his brother to learn a little bit about their history, where they come from, and some of their musical influences, and let them tell a few of the stories that they've collected while touring the country playing their particular brand of Americana music. And we were all set for that for this afternoon. Unfortunately, as I was packing my gear and getting ready to go today, I got a message from one of the wives of a Ping, one half of the Ping Brothers group, that that Doug took sick. He's just not feeling too well. So rather than go half a Ping, we are going to put off the Ping Brothers episode until they are full bore Ping, when we can get both of the brothers to sit down. But I didn't want to bypass doing a show today, so I am heading out over to the Point to see what kind of trouble I can get into. I did touch base with Jenny T of the Mile High Comedy Theater, and no relation to the Mile High Show, but Jenny and her troupe that she works with the Mile High Comedy Theater are gearing up for a May 16th show, variety show. It's a mix of improv, stand-up, and sketch comedy at the Prescott Elks Theater right there in historic downtown Prescott. And I reached out to her, and we traded a few messages, and her and at least one other of the troupe, I believe it's going to be Cisco Ortiz, will be joining me at the Point. So we'll learn a little bit about the two of them. We'll learn a little bit about the show that's coming up and why they chose comedy as a route to express their art form. So hope you enjoy it. Again, we will be hooking up with the Ping Brothers at some point in the near future, I hope. But today, sit back and listen to Jenny T and Cisco and all about the Mile High Comedy Theater show that will be at the Prescott Elks Theater on May 16th. So sit back. I hope you enjoy it. And thanks for tuning in. I'm good with black, yeah.
If you have it, I'll take it.
They got everything.
If you don't, I'll have some as well. Yeah, if they have ginger beer and acai flavored sugar.
I can't believe that's burning my lips. Does it burn
you? It burns so good.
Or is it like an allergic reaction that I should be concerned about? Like, am I
going to ginger beer?
Seek the anaphylactic shock during this.
Seek the aid of a doctor.
Do you have one of those EpiPens we can stab you in?
Yeah, no, that would be like, cool just for fun, but
I'm
like,
supposed
no.
to do that. No, you're not supposed just once,
no,
and,
just once
push.
And push.
I didn't
yeah.
have an EpiPen, so I used a fork. Does that count still?
No.
You just have to dig around in there.
Just get it in there and dig around.
Guys, ready to go?
Sure thing.
Let's sure. do it. First, tell me who you guys are. We got Jenny.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, professionally, I started comedy January of 2014 when I joined Mile High Comedy Theater. And I think it's been a lifelong learning process. It's been definitely infused by my hilarious family. And that's
big family?
Yes.
A lot of siblings?
I have two sisters.
Two sisters?
Yeah. So we're originally from Staten Island, New York, and we migrated west to Prescott, Arizona.
When did you end up out here?
In the 90s. I was 10.
Like 8, 9, 10. Where do you here. Fall? Where do you fall in line with the three girls?
Youngest.
Youngest of three.
Yeah.
And how about you?
My name's Cisco Ortiz. Cisco. Okay. Yes. I started my comedy career about 30 seconds ago when you pressed play.
Thank you.
No, I started shortly after they had formed the group. I came in to kind of sit in and loved it so much, and they apparently liked me a little bit too, so they asked me to stay.
Now, the group being the Mile High Comedy,
Mile High Comedy Theater. Yes, Cynthia,
MileHighComedyTheater.com, if That's I'm correct. Not mistaken. I'll put a link up there. And I did sit down with Cynthia Sobo, one of the founders, several weeks ago, a month and a half or so ago, and we talked a little bit about her history, and that was before that show. Was in February at the Elks? Was that the last
January
one?
January 21st.
Tail end of January. You got another one coming up, though.
May 16th.
Give me a little bit about what the show consists of. Is it all improv, a mix between improv and sketch, or what do you guys got?
We have improv. There's sketch comedy as well, and typically we'll have a stand-up, either one of our group or a guest come in and do some stand-up. So we have a guest this time, and
that will be Billy O'Connor, is a fantastic comedian and also a very talented writer,
yes.
And he'll also have his book available for sale.
The Bronx Bookie.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Confessions of a Bronx Bookie. So we're really excited about that.
It's a fascinating story.
Great book.
I talked to him a few weeks back, just really briefly over at Brick and Bones, before they opened up for the comedy that night, and just listening to a couple of his stories and the way he crafts his conversations was very interesting. I got a chance to read the book. It was really good.
Yeah, he's great. We'll have that available. Yeah. I won't have my book available. Because it's not written yet.
Correct.
Right. Confessions of a Latino Food Truck Owner. But look for it soon.
Now is that your background? Food service, or you just
no,
like hanging
no.
out
no.
on church?
No, I like eating. That's a kind of a prerequisite.
Yes.
But that is one thing that I am looking into trying to do.
Trying to get some of them thoughts on paper?
Right, right.
Fictional? Autobiographical, or what are you leaning towards?
A mix of real life stories, you know, and a lot of fantasy.
Yeah,
a lot of fantasy.
So, what were you doing before you got behind the mic and started working with Mile High Comedy?
I have my background's in telecommunications, so real comedic content. and then I started working for retail, which. That gets a lot of laughs as well.
Yeah. Locally here, or was that?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Did you grow up around here?
No, I grew up originally in New Mexico, near Santa Fe. Moved to Arizona when I was about 12.
Okay, so both of you came in preteen.
Sure.
Formidable years for you. So
we would not be the people we are today.
Well, it brings up, you were talking before we started about the... what do they call it? The Whiskey Off-Road?
Yes.
The bike race. It's pretty big race here. There's a lot of activity here in Prescott, but it's a kind of a strange mix between an artistic community and then some of the old school, the old money ranchers and a pretty good retirement community as well. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an odd community. I find it odd anyway. I come from a much bigger metro area. I've been out here about 10 years. And it can be a challenge to kind of
find a niche. Yeah,
find a niche, and it, there's it's a hard mix of a extremely liberal small group and a very conservative larger group. How are you finding comedy received? Because comedy can be usually tend to kind of the liberal aspects and a little more free form and some ideas that sometimes offend people. That's part of
really comedy. We really pander to our audience, so. No, I think, you know, overall I think we've been well received, you know, and just looking into the audience, you know, from the stage, little hard to see sometimes, but I think we have a good representation, a good mix.
You think the population is pretty cross referenced by your audience? You get a little bit of each side.
Yeah, I find that the community here in Prescott is different and it is unique, but I also find that uniqueness also brings hilarity to the comedy that we present. And for our particular show, I feel like we reach all demographics as well as backgrounds, with the performers as well as the material. Yeah. Everyone has a diverse background that offers diversified comedy. I think when you get stuck in stand-up comedy, you're only presenting your background or your experiences or your perceptions, and people get caught up, and that's where they get offended. We also give our audience the benefit of the doubt. You know, everybody has their you know, preconceived notions and perceptions of this world, but I'm hopeful for our audience, because this year is going to be our anniversary show, and we have a great following at the Elks Theater. We have a know, a demographic that's unique, but also I think we're attracting a broader range of people as our cast grows and our workshops improve, and you know that we're able to work with the community in different age levels, and so I think that we're gonna not be just select like the rest of the Elks Theater crowd usually is.
So the challenge is trying to offend
everybody equally
in the audience. Yes. So that's
get
how
everybody
you,
to
that's
get
how
up
you
and
know.
Walk out. Well, and with the improv aspect, and the that's sort of an audience participation, getting your ideas and then running with them there. You know, that kind of, you know, well, it comes from the audience, so it kind of gives you an idea of what direction they want to kind of take. That, you know, what kind of trip they want to take that evening too.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. We have we really try to have the audience participate in the show. We want them to be part of the show. If you've seen Whose Line Is It Anyway, those kind of games, we have a lot of those type of games. So we need the, you know, offers from the audience to put us in the scene and tell us what we're doing.
Without that audience buy-in, it's less fun for you guys and definitely less fun for the folks in the seats.
Yeah, if they can get engaged, and then, you know, they're laughing at themselves and with us as well. Yeah. So
with that good mix of some sketch, some stand-up, some improv, Jenny, what's your strongest suit? Where do you feel that
for
you
myself?
Shine?
Yeah. I would say definitely the improvisational comedy, just because it's a challenge, and I prefer the challenge, but all of it is a challenge, so that's your vote. Where do I shine? I'm too humble to answer that question.
Okay,
I don't know. See, you shine so brightly.
Like
I
a bright
can't
star.
Tell. No, that I think being in the moment, and I think the way that you are considerate of the other people on stage, you're a professional. I think you do great.
How about you, Cisco? What's your strong suit?
My strongest suit is cleaning up after the rest of the cast and crew after the show.
Making sure nothing
gets
left behind.
I think that's why they brought me in. I think that's why they brought me in.
He is our strongest portion of the janitorial staff.
Yes. And the weakest Latino, even though I'm the only one. So, no. I think that, you know, the part that I enjoy the most, which it's debatable about whether that's my strongest suit or not, are doing characters.
Yeah.
I think doing characters, doing voices, I've been doing that since, you know, we were around the dinner table, and my father would say, "Hey, do Fernando from Fernando's Hideaway from Saturday Night Live," and I would look at him and I'd be like, "You look marvelous."
Now, large family? You come from a large family, or
you know, yes and no. I mean, it was close, immediate family. And huge, I mean, you know, so my brother, me, my mom, my dad, so okay, you know, just, small, just close, just two of us. Yeah. And then immense extended family in New Mexico. My mom's last name was Anaya. And you open up Anaya, it's like a chunk of the Santa Fe phone and Albuquerque phone book. So it's huge.
Now, it sounds like what you just said about your dad sitting around the table. Did he encourage you to kind of...
He forced me to
have a good time.
when I was done crying, then I would be like, "Well, okay."
What was his background? Was he a funny guy?
He was always he was one that always encouraged our humor. He was always one that said, "You know what? If you have a sense of humor, it'll carry you through time and situations." So I always loved that, you know. And his background, he was a teacher, so I think to his credit, he probably did quite a bit of stand-up.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, took quite a bit of engaging his students. So
now, in line with that, there's a couple of instructors, three that I know of, in your group. Annie?
Yes, Annie O'Connor, Jantina Moulton-Russell, and Cynthia Kitts.
And are they all still at Bradshaw?
Yes.
I think so, yes. So
I'm actually applying at Bradshaw. So if we can get Jenny in, then we'll be a completely...
Are they looking for custodians over there?
That, and they might let me teach business. So that'll be
a good... Is that what you want to go into business over there?
Yeah.
That is performing each and every day.
Yes.
I work within the schools, not teaching, but I'm at schools a lot for other assignments and covering different events and things, and have for years. And you see the teachers, at least the ones I've observed that are successful, that really reach their students, are the ones that definitely engage with them. Right. And to do so, you got to keep their attention. You got 50 minutes, and out of that 50 minutes of each class, you've got maybe 5 or 6 minutes where you can actually
collect
grab
your
hold
material
of somebody. Yeah.
And if they know you do stand up and improv, it's even more of a
pressure.
And with the knucklehead kids, it's all improv. It's, you know, you're constantly dealing with challenges from there. Now, how about your family? Did they encourage you? Were you a performer as a kid, or was it a...
So, my family is a bunch of comedians. Most of them are not professional comedians. My father was a huge influence in my comedy. I view it as a coping mechanism. And so I think that the ability to laugh, especially in times where you just feel like screaming and crying, definitely gives you power, you know, as an individual to overcome any obstacle.
Yeah.
So with this experience as a professional comedian, I think it validates the years of training that I've had. For my father and my family. I'm not the funniest person in my family, and there's probably 50 people ahead of me.
Yeah.
So my father, my uncles, my mom, she's funny, but all different kinds of funny.
Yeah.
So it's great.
What, aside from family, and for both of you, aside from family, who were your comedic influences growing up? Who was the first person that you saw or heard an album or saw on TV that you looked at, that's something I could do?
For me, the late great Robin Williams. He was always one, from Mork and Mindy to, gosh, you know, guest hosting on Saturday Night Live, his stand up, just continually a genius. And, you know, as far as improv, one of the only people that I've seen that's been able to incorporate true improv into their stand up act, and just work off the crowd, just
absolutely,
and the range he had, because in his later years, after he was established and well known throughout the world as a comic, taking on some pretty dramatic roles, and in his later years, that's actually what he was probably more known for, especially for some of the younger audience.
Right.
Yeah.
How about you, Jenny? Who did you...
Well,
or just your family? That was it? They made you laugh enough?
Well,
you never...
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, we're going back to reference point of, you know, before 10, I don't know, you know, your looking glass is so small when you're a child. So the people that influence you the most, obviously from 0 to 5, are going to be the people who raise you. So my parents were the funniest people that influenced me. But my two always that come up right at the forefront of my mind is Robin Williams and Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
My dad had Bill Cosby records. So I would sit with the record player and just listen to his stand-up with my dad. And so that also bonded me to the comedy as well as into my relationships.
That's interesting because those are two, while both hilarious folks, they're really different ends.
Absolutely.
Robin Williams so fast and punchy and improv. Bill Cosby was really one of the first long-form storytellers. Yeah.
Right.
In those albums, you know,
right.
To My Brother Russell, I think, was one. There was a few. I got a few LPs sitting at home. I used to do the same thing.
Yeah. So,
love listening to those as a kid. Where do you find yourself more of the quick-paced, fast-paced, or long-form, or do you try and do a little mix?
With the improv, my strong point is storytelling and long form, but with the experience that I have, I can say that the quick-witted humor is what comes naturally to me.
Yeah, and I think with improv, for me, it's that quick wit and thinking who would be good in this situation and just trying to jump into that character and be in that moment. And then I think, you know, with us working on stand-up as well, you know, you try to get a little bit more into a story with a punch, and so working on that part as well. So it, you know, kind of trying to balance it out.
Yeah. Now you mentioned characters. Do you draw from characters and do impersonations of people you know? Do you create characters? Do you try and do folks well known famous folks?
Or? I think it's the situation calls for it. You know, you get a a prompt from the audience that says you're doing this and this, and then you can jump into, you know,
a Hispanic dialect, and sometimes you had to do this,
or you know, there's a we were when we came in, I said, "Hello, how are you? Good to see you."
What's the hardest accent to chat to capture?
Farsi.
Yeah,
I don't. Still working on that one. We're not going to hear. We're not going to hear.
We're still working on our. Yeah,
yeah.
You know,
I'm still working.
Eastern
on
Eastern Nordic. You know, we're. It's,
No one lives there. There is no accent. It's penguin.
It's just a lot of this.
Yeah, it's like.
Man, I'm cold.
Yeah.
And rubbing noses.
Right. So we can't demonstrate that over
we're
airwaves.
We're doing it right now.
You can, right there.
It's
there you go.
Very exciting.
Yeah. Hey, now, this is a family podcast.
The microphone. Right. With the microphone, I meant.
Now, sounds like you guys were both kind of performing, whether you knew it or not, growing up. But as far as a formal professional, or at least a formal performance, was it both of you with the troupe, with the Mile High Comedy Theater, or did you try?
Well,
did you
school,
try
you know, to a certain degree in school, I was just thinking, I won the Best Actor Award at my junior high school when I was in eighth grade.
What That's was your fantastic. Role? What was your?
I don't. I think I
role.
Might have been a gingerbread man or something. So
junior high,
yeah, we are
to?
The gingerbread.
My goodness.
So, in fact, I think I ran across that clipping. When you're in eighth grade, you take the parts that you're given. So
Cisco was homeschooled.
Homeschooled.
Right. Yeah. The award was given by my mother. And I came a close. It was close. And my brother wasn't
came in
acting.
Third behind your brother who took first and second.
Right. Yeah. He.
And the cat.
He was very talented. Yes.
How about you? What was your. Was the first real performance other than for family with the comedy theater?
Yes, I would say that was truthfully probably the first performance was May 17th of 2014.
Last year, and where was that? Was
at it the in, Elks Theater.
At the Elks.
Yeah, that was our first
show.
In front
of an audience.
Yeah.
Our first show, right.
Do you remember what bit you did?
What bit?
Did you do stand up, or was it all the improv?
It was improv sketch. And then I did my first stand up in August of last year. And I spoke mostly about relatable and observational topics.
Go over well?
Yeah.
Good audience, good crowd, good
Absolutely.
Laughs?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Were you able to concentrate on your performance and on what you were doing, or were you running that inner dialogue in your head about, were you able to stay within it, or did you...
When I did the stand-up, we had a lot of advantage than another, say, Joe Schmo, who's doing an open mic down in Phoenix.
At a bar or something, yeah.
Because we had 4 months of coaching, you know, from Cynthia. So we were able to rehash and go over and do it in a formal way to be professional and to be able to present something of... you know, value and
to be able to polish it up before you were actually
it before. Right.
Well, that was one of the things that drew me to Mile High Comedy Theater was the fact that we do offer stand up workshops,
yes,
as well as the improv workshops as well. And then, you know, you do well in the improv workshops and you can work into being, you know, part of the cast. And, you know, once you're done with the stand up workshops, you know, there are a number of us who have gone on to perform stand-up locally. And
yeah. Walk me through some of the training that you get through those stand-up workshops. What are some of the exercises you do? What are some of the drills that Cynthia runs you through?
Well, the idea of, you know, comedy comes in the, kind of the rule of threes with comedy, where, you know, you say two things. The third thing is your punch. Set up and punch, you know, going to the hack drawer. My grandfather died peacefully in his sleep, but the children on the bus were screaming. You know, so yeah. So not only the idea of, you know, the setup, the punch, but that punch has to take what that setup is and completely turn it around.
Flip it on its ear.
There's an element of surprise with comedy.
Yeah. So I found that with the stand-up, that there was a lot of foundational information I would have received over a long period of time of experience of going up and finding out for myself. So it was a condensed version, crash course of how to do this, how to do it well, and being with one of the best teachers.
I was going to say that with the coaching of somebody who's
absolutely.
Done this, who's been in the trenches, Cynthia.
She did stand up in LA for a number of years and, you know, was able to hone those skills. We learned a lot of etiquette as well as,
absolutely.
You know, you hand the mic to somebody, you don't, you know, just leave it, or before the end of your set, you thank the audience and say your name once again, you know, things like that are common that, you know, sometimes you don't, you know, doing stand up and performing with other people, you don't see that all the time. So you know, to have some, at least a type of formative education on it is great. Yeah. I think that the people that have come from Mile High Comedy Theater to doing stand up present themselves professionals and we get out there and do it.
Now, you guys both have chosen to do something most people really, really hate doing and avoid doing at all costs.
Well, speaking, it's part of my probation.
Probably
so,
you're forced to do it?
Yeah.
But you can't do it near schools? What?
No. Well, that's why I'm trying to get to the school, is if I can do that, do some, you know, some service, community service, and then maybe I'll be, released. But
public speaking in general has always been one thing that people dread doing. It's causes severe anxiety in a lot of folks. Do you feel any of that, or is your desire to perform, does it overshadow any anxiety, or do you still feel that those butterflies coming in?
Well, to go back to the point about laughter being a great coping mechanism, I had to learn that making people laugh is something that everyone can do. You just have to find your type of funny, what makes you laugh, and to be concise with where they're at. So for me, I think that... I lost my train of thought.
It's all right. Public speaking. That's a good example.
Yeah, I tell you, I get nervous. Yeah. I've often thought, once I stop getting nervous, then that's when I have to really be worried
and find something else
right,
to challenge
cause then,
you.
Right, because then it's getting you know, old. But I, you know, Johnny Carson, he was one who had stage fright continually. Yeah. He had talked about how
extremely
nervous,
shy as a kid too. Yeah.
So you know, it's just one of those things. Like you were saying, you're. This is what you have, and this is what you want to get across. So it's one of those things that realistically you're going to have to deal with. So, you know, there's no better way than just by, you know, facing it and getting out there on stage. And I think, you know, once you do that, you find it's not as bad. The audience there, that, you know, that's one thing that we talk about at improv. The audience is rooting for you. They're not going to, you know, they're not there to judge you. They're there to laugh. So,
yeah. So I view stand-up and improv to be two subsets of the same group. With my viewpoint, I see improv to be group therapy, whereas stand-up comedy is an individual therapy. And as the comedian performer, you are able to reach the audience and hopefully pull them out of themselves for that moment in time to laugh. And if you can give them that medicine, nothing, you know, can supersede that. And they'll take that with them and hopefully are able to give that to someone else, whether it be in a face-to-face conversation or maybe in a group at work, somewhere, somehow, to apply it to their life to make them happier.
Now, you brought up a few times as a coping mm-hmm. and referencing it as therapy.
Mm-hmm.
The old adage is that behind every comic is a warped and damaged individual.
A sad clown.
Well, I am
wrecked. I'm a mess.
on a serious note, is this helping you guys deal with
it? It really is. You know, we have our rehearsals weekly, and if I miss one, I really feel like I've missed group therapy.
Yeah.
It's my therapy. You know, you get out there, you lose your inhibitions, you're in the moment. And there's something very cathartic about it.
Therapy from what? What's eating away at what's eating away at?
Very heavy drug addiction. So, no, no. Just, you know, the normal stressors of life.
Yeah.
You know, things build up, and comedy to me is a release. So.
That's what I was just finding, that release. Whereas other people may turn to, you know,
ginger beer,
drugs, alcohol,
food.
You know, at the gym, there's guys I know that are in five different softball leagues. That's their coping mechanism.
That's a problem in itself.
Yeah. I've been in one D league,
and that was enough for me.
Bunch of knuckleheads. Knuckleheads with bats.
Yeah.
That wasn't good. How about you, Jenny?
What's eating?
What are you coping with?
Oh,
as little
goodness.
Or as much as you want to share. Nobody listens to this show anyway. Sorry.
They're all going to listen, and you listen
They're gonna
now.
They're going to laugh at you.
They're all going to laugh at me. I wish I could pinpoint it and say this, and this, but the most general thing is life. But truthfully, I would say poor choices in life is what I battle, because I'm human. And I've made a lot of poor choices. But through those poor choices and overcoming not making them again builds relatability. And so the more poor choices you make, the more relatable you are to more people.
Yeah.
So I'm a train wreck as well.
And then,
I must be relatable to a lot of people.
And then again, like you said, everybody's going to make poor choices. I mean, that's being human. So it's not that we're not going to make them again, but okay.
I plan on making some soon.
I might make one before we turn this recorder off. I made a few this morning. And I think that's why the Ping Brothers didn't show up. They started reading my passport.
Oh, my goodness. We're going to do that.
I'm going to go talk with that guy. But you know, when you make them, how you're going to react to them, how you're going to be able to overcome whatever drops in you, that's where kind of where the improv comes in. You know, you never know what the audience is going to throw at you. That's a much smaller scale, obviously.
Absolutely.
The adage that comedy comes from pain, you know, and making light of that. And like you said, people relate to that.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my goodness, I know exactly how that feels.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that when someone's able to see the funny in something that's hurt them so much, I think it gives them that opportunity to say, you know what, I'm going to leave this at the door and this no longer holds me. I'm done. You know, and so when you're able to laugh at it, and it might take you 2 years to laugh at it, but eventually you're going to say that doesn't burden me anymore. Yeah. And so that's a gift. And so when we're in front of the audience and the audience is laughing at these ridiculous characters, you're like, all right, it's okay that, you know, I'm crazy, but I'm helping someone right now.
That is one thing that we really, that's one of our philosophies at Mile High. And, you know, with the performances that we've done, is that we're giving back to the community. We're trying to provide the community with something that they don't get all the time, you know, and something that's different. You know, there are some stand up that goes on. There's other improv, but we really try to bring all elements of improv, stand up, sketch together to one show, and give this as a gift to the community of Prescott.
Yeah, and when I for
$10 a ticket.
Yeah, I was essentially volunteering my time to promote the comedy at the Loft because I was so passionate about the opportunity that so many people were missing, where they could just escape the world and laugh at their pain. Personally, after the Yarnell Hill fire, I saw so many people that were so hurt. And for me, it was more so dealing with the past of watching my family hurt and grieve after 9/11 that put that fire inside of me that said, people need this.
Yeah.
They don't know they need it, but laughter is a true therapy. So here's a, you know, a flyer to this show. And then I saw the opportunity on Facebook, come to Mile High Comedy Theater for an opportunity to perform or to be a part of the cast, see what it's about.
Was that for one of the open house?
It was the open house invitation on Facebook in January of 2014. And me personally, where I was at that time, was like, I need to do this for myself. And once I got over all the things, not got over, but once I got into it, realized I'm doing this for much more than myself. I'm doing this for my family. I'm doing this for my friends. And I'm doing this for strangers now. And that, you know, that's the four levels of comedy, is to perform it, to your friends and family, make them laugh. The second level is to perform it to strangers. The third level is to perform it to strangers and make them laugh. And the fourth level is to do it on a large scale and get paid for it. So that's where we are.
Now, is that where both of you want to be? Do you want this to be your profession? You see this to be what you do? Or is this a sideline for you guys at this point?
For me, it's a guiding light on the path. And it could evolve and be a career. Right now, it's a passion. And I've always been told, as we all have, your job loses, you know, the quote-unquote title of being a job when you love what you do.
Gotcha.
So I love what I do when I do this. So I can't imagine not doing it, whatever shape or form it is, whether it's sketch, improv, stand up, all of it, Mile High Comedy Theater, or wherever life brings us.
So, in some aspect, expressing yourself and performing, or whether it be performing or writing or part mm-hmm. of an ensemble. But expressing yourself through humor is where you'll be doing, no matter what you're doing. That's
absolutely. Yeah.
How much is this going? So jump ahead 5 years. What do you want? Where do you want to
be? I'd like to, in 5 years, be on the sixth level of performance, and that's alone in a closet, dark.
Crying.
Crying at a motel six in Idaho.
Laugh, cry. No, I'm involved I mean, Mile High Comedy Theater has opened up a lot of different opportunities for us. Jenny and I were able to go to and work with National Comedy Theater in Phoenix, and we got to work with and perform with Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall. Mm. So that was an amazing opportunity. We met some people there, some former members of Mile High Comedy Theater, Andrew and Angie Johnson Schmidt, who are in the midst of. I'm working with them to do the first independent film shot in and around Prescott in a long time, called Witch Child. So I'm executive producer.
Oh, nice.
Of that, assistant director, cast, whatever else, cleaning up typically as well. That's usually part of
executive
everything that I do.
Executive producer / janitor.
It boils down to that, but a lot of you cleaning up everybody else's mess.
Yeah, it's. I don't do well at it, well, mind you. I am typecast.
Trying to scratch the surface here, but this is a mess. You're gonna be. This is a full time job with Jenny right here. Just keeping her.
She keeps me sane. So yeah. It's reciprocal. But no. So a lot of opportunity. A lot of opportunities that have come from that. I'm working on another project with Cynthia, our director, as well. So, spray and pray, kind of, put it all out there and see what comes back.
So you may go into the film aspect, producing, writing, or performing. You're kind of see what sticks.
I took for a time had majored in media arts. So, video and the way that video film has evolved, and with the advent of the internet and YouTube and anybody with a phone can create content. It's just interesting to see how all that has come about. So
many different outlets for people to get their art, their thoughts, whatever out there, podcasts. I mean, anybody with a recorder or a laptop can do this. So looking for ways to do that, there's so many opportunities that there weren't even 5-10 years right. ago, let alone 30 years ago when I was growing up.
Yeah, one of the things that I'd like to do is, work with some of the cast of Mile High, other interested people, creative people in Prescott, and do some sketch, film some sketch comedy, mm-hmm. Kind of individually, and then kind of put that together. So that'll be something later.
Now, you brought up Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall. That was one of the premier sketch groups ever.
Absolutely.
Monty Python and Kids in the Hall.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What was, did they influence you growing up? Watching that, were you a fan of Kids in the Hall coming up?
I loved Kids in the Hall. Yeah. So getting to perform with Kevin McDonald, who's, I don't know, he's like a human Muppet almost.
He's amazing. Yeah.
Go ahead.
His influence that I gained from working with him was that we know you're funny. That's not why we're here. We're here to write. I loved that was his introduction, because it meant it's not a competition to see who's bigger, who's better, who's funnier. It's about, let's lay some foundation and let's figure out how we're going to do this. He broke down improv in such a way that it became sketch, which could transform into stand-up and vice versa.
Yeah.
Stand-up to improv to sketch and all.
Couple of our last sketches that we performed at the last show really evolved from the improv that we had done. So I think it's bled into what we've been able to
germinate
do.
The idea in the improv and then build it up, polish it up, boil it down, and then a solid sketch.
Right? Yeah. You do an improv scene and take the elements of that, and write some points to it, some laugh points to it, and you have a sketch.
Tell me a little bit more about the project you were working on. That was down in Phoenix with McDonald.
Yes, in Mesa.
What was it? How did you get involved with that?
It was
give me a little background.
A workshop from National Comedy Theater. A couple folks, Dorian and Chrissy, with National Comedy Theater. I had learned about it at one of the comic book conventions. I saw this sign for National Comedy Theater, and Then I saw that they were doing a workshop, but they brought Kevin McDonald in.
How big of a workshop was it? Was it a day long, a few hours?
One day long. Yeah.
How many folks were involved in it as students, as participants?
I would say between 30 and 50 people that were involved in
it. A large classroom style.
So, you know, worked with him, did some kind of warm ups, some improv warm ups, which we're used to, worked through a few scenes. Worked on kind of story, so beginning, middle, end, and then we kind of broke into groups. Each worked on a separate sketch. We worked on that for the remainder of the day. Came back and performed those sketches.
Yeah.
So that was
in front of a live, sold out audience.
Sold out. Wow. Sold out audience.
Where at?
National Comedy Theater in Mesa.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I'll have to look into that. I'm not familiar with that group.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, do you guys go down to perform in the Valley much, or are you right now still polishing things up here? Or?
I think, you know, when opportunity presents itself, we have some contacts for folks mm-hmm. over there in Phoenix. We're concentrating here. We're trying to
We're definitely in the foundational stage of building a theater that has something to present.
Gotcha.
Beyond the local level. But quite honestly, we went to the Phoenix Improv Festival and it became, as a theater, we went to the Phoenix Improv Festival. And for myself, it became apparent that we're ready to compete. I mean, we are professionals, but I mean,
I'm ready to clean on a competitive
cook and clean
on a competitive level, which I think will take me to the next juncture in my career.
At our kicking show.
Cooking show. See, there's a good skit right there. I could see you doing a skit as a incompetent cooking channel.
Which he doesn't have to act very hard.
That would just be turning a camera on in his apartment.
Yeah. I'll be the, you know, Latino Guy Fieri.
Yeah.
Guacamole, holy moly!
Now, I heard you mention before we started here, you did the race yesterday or Friday? When was it?
Yesterday did the 30 mile. I think that people who do the 50 have to have counseling before and after.
But it
almost broke me.
You had mentioned you're talking to your wife. You're married?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Does she back your comedy? Is this what she wants to see?
No, not at all. She doesn't. She tells me to stop. Get a job.
That's exactly what my wife tells me about this.
Clean.
Everything else.
Clean. No, she is very, very supportive. Yeah. And she...
Now, that brings up the next question. Do you incorporate your personal life at all in either your stand-up or your sketch work or in your writing?
I think you have to. You know, my wife is a 911 911 operator.
Here locally?
Locally.
I probably talked to her.
And so, yeah, as do I.
When he's in the closet.
Right. Well, there's some communication going on about me, but it may not be me the one that's calling 911 rather than having 911 being called on me.
I wrote feature stories, and I had a column here locally for a number of years, and I incorporated my wife and my son. I've got a small son in those articles and in those stories, and I do a local radio here to talk, and she hates that. First off, she didn't know I was doing it. She refuses to read anything.
Well, that's a trick.
Write.
Don't ever tell them.
Well, there's the thing. She refuses to read anything. Not she doesn't refuse. She's sick of hearing me talk at home. What does she want to put it in her eyeballs for?
Right.
But she just didn't read what I wrote. She had no idea what I was covering or anything. And she's going through the store one day, pushing. It was when my son was very small. He's like two and a half, and she's got him in the cart. And I had just written something about, and I don't even remember what it was. But it boiled down to I was upset in the column. I was upset at my wife and son because while I was relaxing on the couch, they were making up too much noise chopping wood in the yard, something to that effect. A small little attempt at humor, and she got stopped in the grocery store by somebody said, "Oh, this must be my son Anthony. This must be Anthony. Are you Sandra? Oh, I love reading your husband's column." She had no idea what she was talking about.
What are you telling those people?
No, well, she comes in, she goes, did you write about me? This is, you know, 2 years into this. She goes, did you write about me and Anthony in the paper? I said, probably. Yeah, I'm sure I did. So she jumped online and started pulling up the column. She didn't speak to me for 3 weeks. She was very, very upset. She's not a fan of me speaking about her outside.
Right, having her life, living her life in the
paper. She doesn't like that. And I've talked with other comics. I know some comics over the years who battle with that. And they, you know, the same thing. We got to draw, especially stand-up, because the days of you know, the Henny Youngmans and the Dangerfield, where it's just joke, while polished and hilarious some of the old comics were, comedy now has changed. It's a little more personal. You're a lot more vulnerable on stage as opposed to doing a character only as a character.
Right.
Comedy audiences today, probably fueled by Bill Cosby and Carlin and others over the years, want, for the most part, they want the entertainment as a story form. They want to know the person up there. It's a really vulnerable spot for comics. And I know some comics who have had trouble with that, incorporating their family life into their act when it's not done in a cartoonish form.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any issues with that, or is your wife really...
Well, I have no shame, so I'll bring it all up. No, she's very supportive. You know, I think she gets it. She's been with me through this adventure from the beginning, and she's always been supportive. And, you know, once in a while, she'll say something, and it's hilarious. And she'll say, well, you're not the only funny one in the house.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, if you're going to use that, I get royalties, you know, so...
How about you, Jenny? Do you draw on your personal life when you're working stand-up or when you're writing?
I do, and I, like I said earlier, I like observational humor, so I draw a lot of things from people around me, whether it's direct, close relationships or just some stranger I saw in the store. But my support network definitely gives me a lot of material. So they're definitely a bunch of comedians. It's really rewarding. But my better half, who will one day be my husband. Did you hear that? You will propose. Not.
Oh, you got a scoop.
His name's Anthony. He goes by Tony. But he is...
a beautiful human being.
He is so great. He is... one of the funniest people I ever have met.
How long you guys been together?
Well, funny story is, we met backstage at the first show, the Elks Theater.
Just so about one year
and maybe
she got to him first.
Before Cisco could divorce Desiree.
He's a catch.
Yeah, so that was absolutely...
What was he doing backstage?
He is
helping me clean.
Helping you clean.
Helping with the janitorial running,
he,
staff.
He was running the mop, and you had the bucket.
What? Right.
Well, now he's my janitor. He cleans up all my messes.
Man,
I'm a good trainer.
That guy needs a raise.
He's his best friend is Kevin Rose, and he was our headlining comedian. So he was backstage helping Kevin and. You know,
I wonder if I've met Anthony. I may have.
Probably.
I could have.
He's a very reserved individual, but one-on-one, he's hilarious. So, but he is a writer, and he's so intelligent. And so he gives me a lot of feedback when I'm doing my material, which is day-to-day, all the time.
Now, that is so beneficial. Seriously, you know, the feedback that you get, because, you know, your family is going to be the one that hears your material first. You're the one who's going to run... You know, you're going to run your joke by your family before anybody else. And, you know, you may think that something is really hilarious. You run it by them and you get one of the, really? You're going to tell that one on stage?
Still working on that one, huh?
Yeah, that one's a joke in progress, isn't it? Yeah, you might want to work on that one a little bit.
Years ago, probably before you were born.
Fair enough. I'll take that compliment.
I had, it's a slack on me, boy. I'm getting old. I did, I was working with a couple of comics in the San Francisco Bay Area and doing some photography for them. And we ended up hanging out. We got pretty close. And at this point in my life, we were strongly chemically influenced. So we would hang out at a lot of clubs with these guys. And
cleaning products is what you're saying.
Sort of.
Yes.
Cleaning and dirtying up products. I actually got first time I saw Robin Williams perform live was wow. in this time frame. But this guy was a feature, and he would headline some of the smaller clubs. And since has gone to LA, he's in the production side now for television. But he was running a couple of open mics on off nights when he wasn't on the bill at some of the clubs. And we got in the habit. I'd gotten in the habit of hanging out with this guy and sitting in the back of the club at the bar, watching it, and you know, doing our running commentary on the guys on stage. And he goes, "You need to get up there. You need to get up there." So after a large bottle of courage, I did. I did that for a number of months. We'd mm-hmm. go up pretty regular, and I made the mistake of cleaning out an old box about a year ago, and I found the little micro cassette recordings of some of those performances that I was just killing at, and they were the worst. They were horrible. Horrible, horrible stuff.
Hindsight is 2020,
isn't
it? Oh
my god, yes. Sobriety is 2020. Yes. Oh my goodness, it was horrible.
Absolutely.
And, you know, but then again, on those tapes were some folks that are now very successful at what they do, and they were horrible. So
right.
the you know, those are the stages you kind of go through. And I just I'm
at that stage.
Yeah.
I did not have the courage to pursue this. I didn't have it. It was not in me. What were some of the first? Now you guys perform and you worked out bits and material through your workshops before even taking the stage. How have you guys rate yourself? How have you evolved as writers and performers from those first days? Is it night and day, or did you come
absolutely
in pretty
absolutely you know, not comparable? Yeah, my growth has just been a steady incline, but it's so much fun to look back and say, "Wow!"
Yeah.
One thing that I did, just having awareness, is that I went into it knowing nothing and was aware that I knew nothing. So I was like a sponge. Yeah. And I think that's essential. And my second thing is, only perform when you're sober. Period.
Good rule of thumb.
I've learned to do everything while I'm sober.
Now, as opposed to some areas and probably the majority of the comics that are out there now, who started by going up on an open mic at a bar, at a club, going in cold. You guys have the added benefit of being able to start in a theater, in a training atmosphere, which, you know, I'm sure you've seen when folks take the mic in an open mic in a bar. So a lot of those folks in there are not there to see comedy. They're there
right.
because that's their bar, their hangout, and they happen to have a comedy night.
Sure.
When you're going up and working out your material in an audience, that being your fellow classmates mm-hmm. and the instructors, how beneficial is that to be able to fall on your face in front of a very supportive audience as opposed to guys who are upset because you're drowning out the basketball game on the other end of the bar?
To me, it's the difference of you know, trying to build a house with a rock and nails rather than having a full tool belt on. You know,
absolutely.
You never know what's going to happen on stage.
Yeah.
You know, you never know. Like with improv, you don't know if you're going to have a heckler. You don't know, you know, what's going to go on. But being able to have those tools that you can access to focus, that you know where you want to end, rather than just kind of going up without, you know, without a net. I think that's really, really beneficial.
Yeah. And let's go on to commercial mode and talk a little bit more in depth on the Mile High Comedy Theater, because you guys both it sounds like this is what you want to pursue. In one angle or another, you want to be involved in this.
Yes.
That's not everybody's case. I'm sure it's not the case of everybody who's involved in the Mile High Theater.
Correct.
What are some benefits, say, for anybody who just thinks it might be interesting, might want to flex their muscles, but they know this isn't going to be a career path they're going to? What can those folks gain from participating in your workshops and contacting the Mile High Theater?
We had a couple who actually dropped in on one of our workshops, one of our rehearsals, and they were a married couple on a date, and it was a great way for them to kind of spend the afternoon and have some fun before they were on, you know, off to have dinner and such. But so, you know, all the way from as kind of on the surface as that, to being able to just develop yourself in front of an audience. If you have a in your career where if you're gonna need to speak in front of a group of
teachers,
people,
like we
teachers,
out.
You know,
sales,
any
retail,
yeah, sales, anything like that. Being able to think on your feet, and then beyond, you know, we talked about it being a cathartic therapy for us. People can definitely use that as you know, a stress relief throughout the week.
And like we mentioned, the public speaking and standing up in front of an audience is a huge fear for the majority of the population. By facing that fear and by working through that out, how do you see that benefiting folks with their other anxieties and their other troubles? You mentioned the humor in general, but just public performing, in what ways can that benefit folks in your eyes, Jenny?
Well, I think it helps, or I think that it could have the potential of helping someone build the confidence and self-assurance that they know what they need to say, whether it be their Home Depot morning meeting or their conference in front of 1,000 people for GE products, like whatever it could be. For myself, I know that it helps me gather my thoughts quicker, which applies to anything, whether it be driving or working or interacting with people in public. And I think also to kind of think about working with group dynamics and learning that everyone in an establishment like a bar isn't there for the same reason. But you gain the skills of being able to collectively scan a room and see the dynamics at a fast pace, which gives you the vantage point of knowing maybe there's a fight about to break out, or maybe there's, you know, whatever it may be, it gives you that
makes
that
you more
heads
aware
up,
of
more
what's
aware
going on,
of what's going on.
I know. Oh, go ahead.
One of the things, you know, when I see successful people, I see people who are saying yes to things, and I'm looking at a couple right now.
Yes.
No. People don't become successful by saying no.
Correct.
You know, to opportunities, to things. And to me, one of the things that we practice on stage and that we live by in improv is saying yes, accepting. Always, you know, one of the games that we play is yes and it is accepting what your stage partner has presented to you, embellishing on it and moving along. So to me, just kind of using that as a metaphor for your life, I think that's one of the things that can, you know, just benefit somebody in general.
And we kind of live in a culture, you know, not so much recently, but a lot of me grew up in a time where to express emotion, to tap into your emotional side was considered almost weak. It wasn't something...
Sure, especially for males.
For males and just in the business community in general, and even some family dynamics, that wasn't the case. So by completely exposing yourself, which is what it is on stage, you're there
right
for all to see, and to be
I can expose myself now legally.
Well, I'm trying to see. No kids in the bar.
No,
go ahead.
No.
Might make some tips. I'm going to go have to get some singles from the bar.
Yeah. But that's how I got into this mess.
To be able to tap into your own vulnerabilities and then wrap your head around it and still be comfortable to go through whatever that project is can benefit pretty much anybody, whatever your line of work or whatever your goals are.
Yeah.
And that confidence, because lack of confidence will hold you back from so many opportunities.
Sure.
and from enjoying so many experiences in life.
That's the most important thing. Yeah. Is teaching people how to enjoy life and to embrace the mundane and to accept responsibility, you know, all the things about life that we choose not to, or maybe we do, but we do it with kind of like a grudge or a chip on your shoulder. I just came home today from my sister's wedding. Congratulations. But watching the people and the group dynamics of large amounts of people, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
But it can also be highly rewarding for my toolbox.
Yeah.
Because if each and every one of those people had the opportunity to just slow down and realize what's actually going on, it would put a totally different spin on large functions.
So your sister's name?
Jacqueline.
Jacqueline. So we can pretty much, we're almost sure to see a wedding scene and a wedding sketch maybe next time at the Elks.
Absolutely.
So Jacqueline may want to come on out and buy a ticket.
Yeah, we're going to put that in our toolbox. I'll put that in my toolbox right next to the Clorox and the Fabuloso.
Well, so you got the Mile High Comedy Theater at the Prescott Elks Theater May 16th.
May 16th.
Show starts at when?
7 p.m.
7 p.m. And while I'm echoing what was mentioned before your last show when I sat down with Cynthia, this is improv. You never know quite where the sketches are going to go.
Right.
While you guys don't work blue, this is not necessarily a show you want to bring the kids to. This would be...
Yeah, it's a suggested audience of 18 plus, just up. For that variable.
You never know where
of
it's
unforeseen
go.
Foul
it
language
go,
or
it
content.
It may get crazy.
That may be yelled from the audience or just a haphazard default from the performer. But...
And
the, reckless.
And the Mile High Comedy Theater also has, aside from the professional shows that you guys produce and partake in, like the one on May 16th at the Elks, you also have workshops that are open to anyone to come in.
Yeah, if you go to milehighcomedytheater.com, we have the bar up top, the menu bar up top, you can find out more about all of our workshops. It has all of our... The upcoming shows, the May show and the other two remaining shows after that, to the end of the year. We have one in August and one in November as well. A little bit of information about the cast members. And I think there's also a link over to Prescott Elks Theater where you can buy tickets for our shows.
And I'll put links to all that up on my web and through Facebook as well. And then the Mile High Comedy Theater has a pretty active Facebook page that keeps everybody updated. Anything you guys want to hit that we haven't touched on?
I would suggest to buy your tickets pre-sale because this show will sell out, and your pre-sale tickets will be $10. At the door, you will pay $12.
The extra $2 goes to my cleaning fund.
Goes
for
to
after.
Cleaning and buying that
Fabuloso.
The smell is fabuloso.
And it's the purple stuff.
If you haven't had a chance to see these folks perform, get out there. And Billy O'Connor is a fine stand-up and an excellent writer. I'm going to link his blog, too. He has a writer's workshop blog that he links to on Facebook quite a bit, and just a character in his own right. We're hoping to... We made plans to sit down with him down in Phoenix. We're still working it out. One of these weeks, I'll get down there.
Definitely come out and see us. Cynthia Sobo, our director, she's funny definitely. We have Jantina Russell.
Yes.
Bliss
performing.
Streetman. Jantina will be doing stand-up as well.
Stand-up as well, and she is phenomenal.
Yeah.
So.
Brent T. Nelson, Annie O'Connor.
Miss Jenny T.
Jenny
who
T.
will be Jennifer Maxwell one day.
And we might even get to see Don Fredo, who might make another appearance. We met him at the last.
He's been instant messaging me a lot.
He's itching to get back. He came for my ride at the Whiskey Row. He's out there with Search and Rescue, still looking for me.
Still looking for.
Yeah, because I.
What'd you call it? A DNF.
DNF.
Did not finish.
Do not finish.
Man.
And it's a good thing I have a DNR. So.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for sitting
down. Thank you so much.
Again, May 16th at the Elks Theater, the Mile High Comedy Theater. We'll be performing lots of fun stuff. A good mix. It's been described as SNL was one of the, that style where there's some good stand-up, great entertainment, some improv, some sketches, a lot of good stuff. So I'm planning on being there. So we will see you there. Again,
can't wait.
Thanks for sitting down and appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good time. Thanks.
Thank you all for listening.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening. Well, I hope you enjoyed it. Again, I was talking with Jenny T and Cisco, two members of the Mile High Comedy Theater, not associated with the Mile High Show podcast, but good friends of the show. They're good supporters of us, and I of them. May 16th at the historic Prescott Elks Theater, right near the courthouse square in Prescott. They will be performing. This will be, as Jenny said, their anniversary show. Their first one was last May of 2014. They have done a couple of since, and they are good sellers. The tickets go fast on those, so get out there, purchase your tickets. I believe she said they're $10. There'll be 12 at the door if there's any left, but get out there. May 16th, Prescott Elks Theater, to catch the Mile High Comedy Theater. Do their show, a mix of improv, sketch, and stand-up. So get on out there. Some of you may remember I sat down and talked with one of the founding members of the comedy theater, Cynthia Sobo, several weeks back, and learned her history, and she is taking her experience as an L.A.-based stand-up and a sitcom writer and helping out some of the young comics here in Prescott, Arizona. So get out there, support them, support us, support the Mile High Show. Get on our milehighshow.com website and click that Donate Now button. It's a PayPal link. You can drop us a few bucks. I want to thank Michael. He dropped us a donation last week, one of our local musicians, and we may be sitting down with him and his group shortly, so look for an announcement for that and all of our shows. We do record locally at bars and restaurants. Today we are back at the Point, and we welcome any and all to come and join us, watch us, listen in on the conversation as we record, and hope to see you soon. Wherever you happen to be, whether that be here in Prescott, Arizona, throughout the state, throughout the Southwest, or wherever you happen to be listening to us, seek out those local artists, the local musicians, comics, singers, whatever. Anybody out there expressing their art, go out, find them, support them, let them know you support the arts, because that's so crucial, is in our busy society, for anyone who has a passion, who has a desire to express themselves, to be able to do so and feel the support from the community. That's what we try and do here with the Mile High Show podcast. We like to shine a light on and promote our local artists of all kinds, visual, audio, whatever that passion is, we want to share, help you share that passion with the community. So thanks for tuning in. Again, we are the Mile High Show at milehighshow.com, and also on Twitter and Instagram under Mile High Show. That's high spelled H-I. Links to our social media are on our website, milehighshow.com. Thanks for listening. I am out of here and gearing up for a full week of activity, trying to find folks that are interesting to me and hopefully interesting to you as well. Thanks for tuning in.